Where are we going? Welcome to this exclusive podcast produced by Spirit Watch Ministries that will show where life in our darkening times is now turning and how you can avoid the detours of deception through the hope of biblical truth. The Lord Jesus in Matthew 24 warned us over 2 millennia ago and how urgently we need to heed him now. Our host is Pastor Rafael Martinez, a seasoned Northwest Indiana-based minister, intercessor, and counter-cult apologist who will help you discern the journey of change we're all on as the last day of the last days now winds down. For more information, check out our Facebook page and our website at spiritwatch.org. Now, here's Pastor Rafael.
Thank you for downloading. This is Rafael Martinez, a minister in the Church of God Cleveland Movement, and I'm the director of Spirit Watch Ministries, an outreach of Christian discernment since 1993, now based in Hammond, Indiana. This podcast is called Where Are We Going? And it's our ongoing exploration of the depths of depravity found in our fallen world today, manifesting through religiously and psychologically abusive cultism. Part of the recovery from cultism is a return back to that which was lost to it. And we make no apology for upholding this simple principle. Shattered faith can be rebuilt, but must be understood for what it is and what it does to those it grievously wounds. Over the years, we've used research, interviews, and conversations with those who are directly impacted by cults to give our podcast the unique voices they have. Our podcasting, therefore, enables us to gain a Christian perspective as well into some very dark worlds of authoritarian spiritual and social slavery, for which, we hold, the light of Jesus Christ alone can guide the way out to true freedom, true peace, and true purpose. His imminent return to this world of woe is heralded by the rise of the slickest of deceptions as he warned his disciples in Matthew chapter 24 in the New Testament. We are only doing as he's commanded there, charging that you take heed that no man deceive you. Our podcast today continues with a series of interviews we had with Michael S. Black, formerly Michael Shamblin, the son of the late cult leader Gwen Shamblin Lara, who was the founder of the Way Down Workshop and the self-appointed leader and prophet of the Remnant Fellowship Church of Franklin, Tennessee. We've said from day one of our ministry that we have no interest in contributing to the last days of deception now at hand, and we've always preached, published, and defended biblical Christian truth and perspective that shows it for what it is. Our podcast today now continues with a perspective on the abuses and outrages that this movement has committed in the name of God, which were highlighted in the HBO Max docuseries, The Way Down, that our ministry helped to launch in 2021, the same year Gwen met her maker and stood before the judgment seat of Christ himself. We're thankful for Michael's contributions today.
Man, Michael, that's just heavy. How in the world does someone come back from such an incredible amount of just personally shaking snark from someone who should obviously love you the most, your mother, and who seems to have just weighed you, who she just like weighed you completely in her balance, found you wanting, and just wanted to put you in your place. I mean, I can't even imagine a mother doing that, but that's essentially what happened here. And I had a great relationship with my mother. I loved her dearly, and she would. I can't even imagine just any mother doing that. After such a, I mean, certainly a soul-shattering put down, a weighing of yourself, of your value, of who you were. You know. She just kind of really put you in your place by that response. What did you do in the days to come after that? I mean, how did you handle that? How did you move from that point on?
It wasn't easy. I did feel that was just showing her cruelty. And I I think we've already talked about it maybe in a previous conversation, but I had been feeling like the whipping boy for Remy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everything that would happen as far as anything negative that would happen to the Remnant, whatever that could be, somehow these things are linked back to me. And they're talked about like people will just be, you know, talking in dark corners of the church, like as if I had the power to make these awful things happen.
Yeah.
And blaming me, and that leads into a situation of me, you know, it's a kind of a game that I was playing within Remnant. Yeah.
And, pardon the pun, but you were kind of more of a coming, you really becoming the black sheep.
I really was.
But you're too valuable to put aside so quickly. There was still some usage that I guess Gwen felt you can get out of you.
Certainly. I mean, I would almost consider myself kind of a workhorse. I'm the type of person that's always trying to produce something right. Pretty much daily, no matter what, I'm going to be doing something.
Right.
But I can't stand to not do something. But anyway, but this is all while I'm secretly working on, you know, this growing darker journal. Right. And I'm keeping that side of things secret. Mm-hmm. And I was doing my best to keep it out of sight of anyone, and I'd be storing these files on I was calling them black drives.
Wow. Yeah.
And I labeled it at black drive 1 and black drive 2, and I would store them in like separate safes around. I always tried to keep some copy in case they found one. I always wanted a backup copy somewhere else. So that I could like send it to Phil Williams or something like that. That's just kind of where my mind was at. I'd keep things under double lock and, you know, storing things. And this is all while I'm still working on worship songs.
Right. Right.
I was a worship leader for Remnant, and that's what I considered my day job. And so I was doing that with David Martin. We were both worship leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I was at this point really, really living a double life of, one of them is like this smiling guy and I'm saying all the right things. And I know how to act by this point in all of these Remnant situations. I know how to play the game really well. And then I'm also seriously becoming a completely different person of kind of Michael Black kind of form of living and writing in other situations when somehow, like when I had just a few hours to myself, like I'd be locking myself in my office at night, which my ex did not like, and she'd try to sabotage it, but you know, even the once in a very rare blue moon, there was a couple of occasions when Aaron actually was out of town with Gwen. She called her Gigi by this point. Gwen started having, Gwen almost had her own alter ego called Gigi. But wow. That's what she wanted, you know, that was her grandmother name, but she really kind of got into Gigi. I think she liked the whole kind of the element of that. And so my wife at this point is calling her Gigi, and they go to, maybe go off to Destin for a day or two or something. So that's when I would have a complete day to like work on things. And then I'm trying to gather my thoughts and get everything in files. And I freely have the house for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very rare. But so in this time, you know, when I'm like in my office this time period, these years writing at night, this eventually leads the security team and Remnant to start trying to film me with these high def drones. They were all started getting into getting these very expensive drones with these cameras. And
that's about the time when drone surveillance began entering the culture.
Yes, that's correct.
And they needed a toy to play with, so much better to help the Remnant, right?
Right. And that's what I was calling the drone age of Remnant. Yeah. That's what I was labeling it in my journal. Wow. And I actually would see them hovering over our house at times. They'd have the blinking red lights up there. It was extremely frustrating. I knew that they were filming those things. That they had some that were very hard to come by, and they could zoom in pretty close. So I started having to close my wooden shutters in that office, and it actually really bothered me. That actually bothered me more than I could say, because I've always liked the moon, seeing the moon at night. I don't know, for some reason, I think that my dad told me that was like my first word. It was like pointing at the moon, and I called it like duh or something. You know, the moon was the big deal since I was like two. And so I would sit there at night, and I would still could see the moon through the shutters when I was writing in those hours I'd have in my office. And then when they start this drone age of Remnant, I start having to close those shutters at night. And so that it bothered me to no end. And I wrote some stuff in my journal, basically like they stole my view of the moon. Oh. And it just upset me. Yeah. It's the little things. It's almost like when you're in a prison and they take away your one little joy or something.
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of my little joy, getting to see the moon. And when they took that, it just further upsetting. And the situations of the fallings were still happening. They kept on. And that's how it went for the rest of my time in the church cult.
So this is how we are going, and then they take that one thing away from you, and that just really, I mean, you had a natural connection there with natural order, creation, and that's kind of where some of your centering was. And then I think while you were trying to be as free as you could in that office and unburdening yourself, that connection just made it so much more enhanced. And then when that you lost that, I can then see how that would just, boy, that would drive anybody up, pretty crazy. Yeah, I can see that.
Sure. And I would say, as far as Gwen, we had already been moving opposite directions for a long time by this point. Her opinions of what I said and how I lived or how I dressed or anything was almost consistently a near 180 degree difference from what I was wanting to be or do by this point. Like the situations, there was an instance in these time periods where I would write these things down in journals, but I was questioning a lot of the solidity of her decisions and projects she was doing. That was kind of a big deal to me. And it was consistently something that bothered me. Just her being unable to finish projects and just like it was a fleeting last second decisions made on so many things. With her, she's just simply wanting to give someone some orders just for the sake of being able to tell someone what to do. That was Gwen's, her MO. She would, when we were doing choir rehearsals during this time period, I ended up writing a second musical. And she would come waltzing into our nighttime choir rehearsals at the church building after she'd been heavily drinking at Jay Alexander's, and she'd say, "Okay, everybody, let's hear this new choir song, right? Make everybody sing it again." Then as soon as it's over, maybe some people are excited about it. Dave and Marge's excited about it, Tish Dunn, and she would be slurring her words, and she'd say something to change. This happened every time. Something needed to change, or let's cut this part out completely and move it to the end. Just really annoying, just unnecessary. Just simply saying to change something just right. so she could get credit for the change.
Right. So she could put her fingerprints on whatever artistic efforts that the church is putting out. She could say, these are my footprints.
Yeah, that Gwen had a hand in all of it. Yeah. And these kinds of, all these things, they were just leading me to want to be somewhere far away from this rapidly drinking and losing any mind she had left. You know, this ultra high on herself woman.
Yeah. You see, that's one of the things I noted pretty early on. Her output, let's be kind of coldly blunt about it. Her product output, her product line just seemed to like dwindle off about this time. It was about 2013, 2014.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's about this time. Yeah. But again, I think everyone began noticing that what she was doing was basically going back and reiterating just the same old tired iterations mm-hmm. of the Way Down Workshop and the remnant positions on things. She just began recycling them over and right. over and over again, to quote, you know, David Martin. And you know, it's just really, I noted that it struck me. I said, you know, there isn't anything really coming out new at all. And in essence, what you're describing me here is and what you're describing here and what I've noticed from what other folks have shared with me is that Gwen's fascination more with doing stuff and being social and like you said, heading to Destin. You know, I don't know if anybody knows what Destin is. Destin's a pretty tony place, especially mm-hmm. where she was living. My brother actually had the timeshare, barely not even three blocks from where she had their place. Yeah, right there. So I knew exactly where she was without even trying. I mean, I'm just going on. Me and my brothers went down to go to Joy, just a nice fishing weekend there. And all of a sudden I realized, what's this address? What? Where are we at? Wow, it kind of blew me away.
You're in the vicinity of the witch queen.
Yeah, I bet. But yep. At least she enjoys some great seafood. I love that Captain D's or something like that. I don't know. Not Captain D's.
Pompano Joe's.
Yeah, that place has some great, great gumbo. I loved it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I'm digressing. So what I noticed is that she'd become more and more decentralizing. She was disconnecting. She was kind of just losing her hand on the overall drive of the church. And she was getting really more and more into herself, into her interests, into her passions. And really, in a roundabout way, you saw your mom starting to slide in what I think could really be called a middle-aged crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really, really good point you're bringing up to just about the product and her production and her mentality at that point. That's
what was the result of all that?
Well, I mean, yeah, it affected the members, of course, because everybody can see it. This kind of all of a sudden I think some people in the Christian world have called it like writer's block or something like that.
Yeah.
She had her own version of that, but it's, you know, you could call it different things. You could call it no longer inspired. But she's drifting into lack of originality. And, you know, it's just everything I think had already been put in place by that point.
Mm-hmm.
And everything had kind of hardened, and she, you know, Remnant was no longer, you know, there was not a place for evolving thought. Let's just put it that way. It never had been.
Yes.
There's no new perspectives that we're going to have anymore, right. except for maybe the divorce doctrine. But, you know, she's, like you said, she's recycling all the earlier material. She's repeating all the same stories over and over. I think the rewriting the Way Down Diet book was, and to someone like myself, it kind of was a gross out. Like, as far as a product, it's kind of an eye roll. Because I think she put in, there was like one new chapter in it, and then the rest is all exactly the same.
Yeah.
And that was simply just one of her old sermons. it's not like she wrote something. And Michelle McDonald, I think what a lot of people don't realize is that Michelle McDonald and Jill Snap are the ones who put the stuff together for Gwen.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They were editing that stuff into a chapter. I'm not saying Gwen didn't write a few paragraphs or something, but they literally put a new title on this book. And that's causing people to feel like they need to go crazy with excitement over it all over again. Mm-hmm. In front of the church, you know, or in front of her at meetings. And that was about as pathetic as anything I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And that's commonly what was happening. And by the way, I think that still happens for Elizabeth. She's taking advantage of that same setup with Michelle and Jill, you know, because she's mentioned she's writing her big new book, right? Mm-hmm. That everybody's cheering about. And I actually heard from someone who left. They told me that they actually got to sit in for one of the live readings of Elizabeth's new quote unquote book. And they said people were almost told to like tear up before some of the marketing people, because it was should be so moving. And basically they told me it was literally like hearing like basic facts, like something from Wikipedia about Gwen. There was nothing to it. And so anyway, these women were ghostwriters for Gwen. She's got her setup going, you know. And
you're saying Elizabeth is basically relying on the same strategy. There's nothing original.
Yes, she's kept the same two women. Those women were kind of Gwen's workhorses.
Wow.
They put together her sermons for her teleprompter. They were the studious librarian type women.
Yeah.
They still are.
Mm-hmm.
And so Gwen got to start living the high life while these women are putting together her sermons.
Right. And from what I understand, that there's a repository of some sort buried somewhere, whether it's under the church or not. That's basically a vault for where everything remnant and Wait on Workshop writing, recording, video, audio is supposed to exist. I've heard that.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had anybody really actually confirm that, but I've heard that from several people. Do you know, in fact, whether that's where they were drawing their stuff from?
Well, yes, I know that they keep everything on servers. Now, as far as where those are, I think they started off-siting some of those servers at some point,
okay,
using companies that serve as these like holding spots.
Yeah,
because like I think it got a little more as technology advanced. It made more sense for them to off-source a lot, because Remnant produces so much data on everything. Every single service, you know, how much space in all the different cameras they kept every camera. You think of all the footage, all these people are uploading these SD cards after every service, them keeping everything. Besides, Gwen is talk everywhere she goes, it's being recorded. Every talk she's given at a leadership meeting is being recorded or filmed.
Right.
So they just have every testimony. It's all in files. So yes, they do have it.
Right.
Like I said, I think nowadays, I'm not sure if it's in the church at this point.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that technologically makes sense or if they could afford that at this point.
Yeah.
But it's somewhere.
Right. And like I said, they had a lot. Gwen's ghostwriter certainly had a lot to choose from.
Yes. Yeah. And Gwen would probably have some sort of theme that she wants in mind. And so then she would have, this is how, you know, I think it works. She has her laptop. She can get up. I've seen her rough notes for a sermon. She has zero grammar. Her spelling's not great. She puts together these kind of random thoughts. And then Michelle and Jill are coming in and they're beefing it up with making it into a sermon. And Gwen then gets to go edit it and read it, and she'll send some edits and they'll, you know, change things how she wants. So they were her, like I said, I'm not saying that they came up with the whole concept, but they were piecing together and they had it all labeled and filed. Why I say librarians is because they had all her sermons labeled under different categories.
Right, right.
Which I know, and, I know that I was part of the marketing. I know they have all of her, they have all of her stuff labeled as some of the talks would be more, you know, marriage heavy or about the kids or about, you know, pick a topic.
Right. But there were some, of course, that were not meant for public consumption, right? They had some that were that contained content and information and doctrine that people outside Remnant weren't supposed to know about, such as the Passover and other things.
Sure, right. There, there were plenty of things that were off limits.
Right, right. So, with all this going on, with this vast data, this bank of data that she could pull from, and of course, very eager ghostwriters work with, you know, Gwen really could do as she pleased. And you were at this point leading that double life, as you mentioned, trying somehow to figure out what you're going to do next. So, what was the next precipitating event that that turned you one way or the other in this time frame?
I don't know if there was any sort of major event, probably until we get too close to the divorce of David Shamblin time. I think things were just going along at this point. With, you know, my relationship to her, these later years, are, you know, our relationship was, it was just like a web at this point. It's like false maternal devotion.
Yeah,
you know, she's gonna show publicly in front of everybody at Ashlawn or the church, but it's completely fake and it's empty, and you know it's suffocating to me. And I knew I was being masterfully watched and controlled. So she had this kind of psychological chokehold on me, and that was her form of quote unquote love.
Yeah,
and she knew I was thinking in an autonomous way, all as always, but I'm still an emblem, you know, for the Remnant Empire, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm also producing new worship songs that, you know, but she can still command me in a way. So that kind of gives her an out, so to speak. She can still command me in front of everyone. And I'm kind of put on this sort of wicked pedestal, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm just at this point, I'm just biding my time in the cage right now. You know, I'm waiting for the right time. And, you know, the journal keeps growing more interesting to me. But I'm sitting there writing, you know, there was worship songs like Kingdom of Love, which became a pretty a popular one for the Remnant. But actually, I'm sitting at the piano. While I'm literally sitting at the piano, I'm like, in my mind, I'm wanting to yell out, like, quit treating me like a criminal. So yeah. I'm like hating everybody at this point. And even, you know, just to bring him up, I know he's passed away, but even David Martin was driving me crazy in these last few years before all this, the end, just with his over the top, like pathetic praise of Gwen. And also he was always trying to drown me out with, he wouldn't even let me say one word from the stage. Like he wouldn't even let me finish a song and say, I couldn't even say praise God, because he would start speaking like he needed to speak for me.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if Gwen was directing to do that or he felt he needed to do it on his own. But he would say, praise God for these songs that come from Gwen's message, like the end of everything I sang.
Yeah.
And I couldn't even, he wasn't even letting me give credit to Gwen if I was going to do it. Yeah. He was going to do it for me. And it was, I think it was just, this was a disturbing time period.
Yeah.
Because I'm starting to watch people, they're getting a little older. And I'm starting to see some people physically and even mentally kind of start to fall apart. Yeah. I think in this time period, because everything was so set, and people start developing weird kind of physical habits. I noticed, you know, this is embarrassing, but David started like pulling in his hair and pulling it out, like he would do it in front of us all the time. I don't think he even knew he was doing it.
Yeah.
And he would just be pulling his hair out just while we're sitting there talking. I'm just, those last few years, he was always doing that. And I think Jennifer Gwen was trying to talk to Jennifer, you know, so Dave, you know, trying to figure out what's wrong. And I want to think that it was subconsciously, it's coming from so many years of like playing a game with this over promotion of Gwen. Mm-hmm. I think stuff was catching up.
Yeah.
Catching up to people. There were people physically decaying in front of me.
Yeah.
Mentally right. decaying.
And that's just, and that was just, you saw that in leadership. Certainly you saw that within members as well. There was all kinds of stories I know you can tell about that. But it's interesting you mentioned that from David Martin's perspective. You know, at this time, you know, the leadership in Remnant was starting to change too. You know, people were coming more and more hands off of it, who had one time been in and been really directly right at the you know the upper crust of leadership. There's such, and I'm thinking about Ted Anger, you know, Anjay, whatever we want to call him today. He's probably one of the most universally feared people and hated leaders within Remnant that I know of, and people speak of him in dark whispers and with literal foreboding when I speak to them, but. Steve, at this time, he was starting to slip away as well and develop his own little direction away. And I think other leaders were involved with that. Do you think it's just all perhaps one of the reasons because they're just trying to break away and develop their own safe space away from the crazy?
Well, I think some of that had to do with who I call the day group.
Okay.
Coming in. And I think that's probably something significant as far as Remnant history is concerned during this time period, kind of leading up to before Joe Lara. Because you have, you know, I just felt like everybody in this time, you know, Remnant was kind of maybe a sitting duck at this point for people. And, because they're stuck on this repeat pattern of sermons, and Gwen's just recycling material. Everything's set at this point. Right. And so you have everyone, they seem to be so impressed with these, you know, they were slick as snake oil salespeople, and they're witchy wives, and they're, you know, they're coming around and they're coming knocking on the Remnant wooden doors. And within several years, you know, There were already people in Remnant that wanted the whole day group out.
Could you? I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt you, but can you explain what is the day group? I know that's something people within Remnant understand, but the people who don't, what is that shorthand referring to?
Well, it's referring to Rob and Tiffany Day, okay. and the huge number of people that came with them into Remnant.
Okay.
From California, I think they came from Texas. They were from California, then they were in Texas, then they came to Remnant in Brentwood.
Oh, yeah.
They moved around. And I kind of use that phrase because they almost were more of like a criminal group to me, at this, especially later on. Hmm. I think they were also very responsible for. They were literally volunteering to become like some form of the bullying arm of the Remnant. Mm-hmm. Like Gwen had already had this big, you know, Remnant army built up, but they were just like very much like control freaks, and they were able to have their own private investigators as well as people, you know, following, harassing others with how wealthy they were. That group was very wealthy. The Days are multimillionaires. So they kind of came in and they lent this ability to Gwen to help her out. Like it was some form of like criminal military industrial complex move or something, you know, like in exchange for power and getting lifted up within Remnant. Mm. Day, if people don't know him, he's something of a mastermind control freak. He's similar, but he's not the same as Gwen. Mm-hmm. But like for instance, he's got every single person in their huge family clan. Remnant's made up of a lot of family clans that people don't understand Remnant. They're just listening to this.
Right.
Like tribes of Israel, so to speak. But the clan, their clan, everyone's required to be voluntarily tracked on this. It's an app called Life 360. So he can see where everybody is 24/7. All of them. Kids, grandkids, like everybody.
Wow.
And they're, you know, their thoughtless ways of living, it made, you know, it made people realize he was just simply there in that church for business growing reasons, because they had this WFG pyramid scheme that stands for the World Financial Group. Okay. And he's the top of that. And they sell this horrible form of life insurance. And that's what seemingly all of them in one way or another were involved with this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, we're talking about multi-level marketing at this point.
Yeah.
And I do want to be very clear. I'm not, my life's purpose is not trying to expose like pyramid business schemes. But it was, that's not my goal. And I realize it's a free country, mm-hmm. but it certainly was like a problem within Remnant, because they started to recruit some members. We're talking 2015 now. This is leading up to the close to the divorce time. They start recruiting people within the Remnant, and you know, it's when they do that, that almost automatically requires a form of loyalty to Rob and Tiffany. Like at the very least, just a very massive kissing up. Mm-hmm. So, which that would be very much against what Gwen's motives were, because she wanted to have people loyal and worshiping her. So eventually, you know, there's going to end up being some kind of conflict with these two later on. And another element was Tiffany, who comes in. She's got the blonde hair, you know, from California. And she's mm-hmm. also something like, you know, a queen in her, you know, clan herself. She's also she also had some quirky things sometimes. She would say stuff and kind of weird, almost like spell type weird stuff going on over there. But these people are multimillionaires. So she becomes something like competition with them becoming Remnant leaders. And they move directly across the street from Gwen's big mansion, Ashlum.
Yeah,
they got their own, you know, old South style plantation called Montview. And they still live there, by the way, which now Elizabeth is in Ashlum. Queen Elizabeth lives in Ashlum, and the Days are still across the street in their own plantation. So they were all very skilled with flattery, and they were, which is very similar to Gwen herself. And so they all rise, Rob and Tiffany, they rise in power, and eventually they're like the top people who worked with the Angers, the Anjays.
Okay.
In talking and hanging out with Gwen constantly. So those two events, they became like the steerers for Gwen by this point.
Okay.
They tried to be like the steering element of Remnant.
So there was this time in which both Ted and Jay Anger and the Day group, as you call them, were starting to approach each other at the table of Gwen. Okay, they're all out having fun together, drinks, whatever people at that level do to blow off steam, whatever they do. What was Ted's chief role at this point? What was he doing? I mean, to many people, he was viewed as her right-hand man, her lieutenant.
Right. Yes, that's what he was.
So how would you contrast or compare his leadership role to the one that the Days were coming into?
Ted would have been considered like the number two in Remnant,
mm-hmm.
the unquestioned number two.
Right.
And Ted was also, I think I've used this word twice now already, but I'm going to say it again, the word workhorse. Ted was the one doing the counseling. He was putting in the hours. Gwen had sloughed off so many things onto him over the years. Anytime there was a tough counseling situation, it's going to Ted. Ted, so in respect, Ted in this respect, I'm not saying in respect of Ted, I'm saying in this respect, mm-hmm. Ted ends up knowing everybody. Right. Everybody had some form of run-in or counsel situation. Ted would be on every text thread. He worked his way into everything. Mm-hmm. He was, right. Him and Jennifer Martin were on these kind of like emergency top secret text threads that were going on with counseling. Him and Jennifer Martin and Gwen probably were the ones constantly just there was never an hour when somebody was not texting Ted on Jay about something. Okay. And so he had all the information. He had played his cards really well for all the years. In Remnant, as far as Remnant goes, because he had been very careful with what he said. I even remember saying something along those lines in a frustrating way, like how careful Ted had been with his text, because mm-hmm. she was looking for stuff against him, and she was having trouble finding it. But he was very imposing. He's 6'4", can be very frightening to people, and
yeah. Yeah,
he would be like the general guy. And I think I remember thinking in that time period, if something happened to Gwen, everyone's going to be looking to Ted for what to do.
Okay, right.
All right. So that is not lost on Gwen.
Right.
And so the days came in. They were more of the charmers, the flatterers. They were the fun. They brought the fun in. Ted can also be funny. Went at the party. So the days, they latch on to Ted because they see he's got some power here.
Oh, yeah.
They're not stupid people. They're extraordinarily smart people, actually. And they know how to do this stuff. They've done it before. But anyway, so with, you know, they're coming in. There's a lot of flattery with Gwen. And Gwen is, of course, allowing it. She loves the flattery. This is impressive
right there.
Ted and Rob and Tiffany, it's very impressive to Gwen, and the stuff that they could do. They could take her downtown, they can go on trips, and now they're, you know, spending the money. They've all got money at this point, and it's impressive to Gwen. And these women who run the church, in my opinion, they're far too interested and they're easily impressed with how a person looks or dresses or talks, mm-hmm. as opposed to what lies within dark hearts. That's just my opinion. But so this whole place, it's turning into like, it's turning into a marketplace, you know, it's with people selling the insurance packages, and it's slightly more of a party environment now. With the day group, the California groups.
Okay.
And within leadership, and these, there were things starting to defy the norms of acceptable behavior that were happening. And I think the church at this point, they had really formed a very dangerous overconfidence in their own self. Mm-hmm. And that's something I saw happening during this time period around 2016. Mm-hmm. I think I told this to Phil Williams too, but I felt it was like the old Greek myth, you know, Icarus, right? Mm-hmm. When he gets arrogant and his father Daedalus is trying to warn him, you know, don't fly too high, and he flies too close to the sun.
Right.
Because his wings have wax on them. They're made with wax. And, you know, these people now, they're even more flattering of Gwen. And everybody, to me, in this time period, they seemingly got so high on themselves.
They became really believing their own PR.
They did. They really did. And I'll explain to you why. But, you know, everyone knows the end of that. You know, his wings, he gets too high, the wax melts, and he falls to the earth because he didn't pay attention to. But that's who we're talking about. You know, we're talking about the worldly living Remnant Fellowship, and they grew blind unto themselves. Mm. You know, Gwen, I think Gwen had, you know, she had formed a new golden calf idol of receiving praise. And these are not the kind of people that they don't give accurate accountings, but they're going to sit on their thrones and they're going to steal with what, you know, whatever they can do. And I'll never forget, there was this time period, I think it was very significant within Remnant. It was a Saturday, Remnant called Sabbath Morning Assembly. It was in 2016. And Rob Day, by this point, they've been lifted up to be leaders along with Ted and Candace, kind of the top leaders. The Martins are almost kind of pushed in the background a little bit. So Rob, he's feeling it this day. Everything's going well. They've, you know, got a lot of people recruited. They're in by now making so much money every month. I mean, millions a month. There's so much money coming in.
And this is from their business holdings from all over, not just from Remnant.
Not just from Remnant, but, right. But things Remnant, were really...
Remnant was a marketplace for them, like you said.
Yeah, and now they've got a... I think they're going to be the top, you know, with Ted and Candace and Gwen. They're the top. And Rob Day actually, he gets on stage after one of Gwen's, you know, especially, I say, quote unquote, moving sermons, you know, with her slowly droning the trance music, right? It's whipping people up into a frenzy. Yeah. And so he gets up, you know, as Gwen always wants, people have to understand every sermon. She always wanted the leaders after she speaks to back her up. That's mm-hmm. how she put it. Yeah. You know, basically repeat some parts they liked, you know, yeah. with giving her praise and then once again saying how moving it all is or how convicted they now feel, you know, and somebody's got to say how lucky we all are to get to hear these words right. straight from the heavens. Yeah. So Rob, he gets up there and he's just, you can tell he's got this heightened sense of churchy pride and, you know, he's on this disgusting stage and he announces, he goes, "We have made it." Because I'm here to say we have made it. And Gwen's dream, you know, he was saying Gwen's dream of the new Jerusalem. She had this dream to have this new Jerusalem on earth, and that has been achieved. And he's saying, I'm saying we have arrived. And people just went crazy. Hmm. And that was something, it shocked. I was in shock. That shocked me. And I went outside into the parking lot to my black car, and I'm just shaking my head because that's the day that I truly knew we had not made it. The exact same time they felt that they had arrived, I knew we had not arrived.
Right.
And the whole sanctuary is predictably going crazy, and horribly, Gwen is allowing this to be said. Like yeah. You could see her, like she had seen God's throne and the heavens open up, you know, through the fake gold painted ceiling, you know, and God was saying, "Well done, good and faithful servant, Gwen," you know, and people are just going crazy. And I am disturbed at the same time. I'm the only one who's disturbed and from the black sheep treatment, which is still ongoing. And I'm not going to get out of it. And so I just had this deep inside feeling of just a disturbing mindset, seeing how this is all going to play out.
Hmm. Yeah. You knew a corner had been turned within the Remnant culture, beginning from Gwen on down.
Right.
You saw something had just turned that, you know, as leaders go, you know, so go the people. From that point on, Michael, you knew a corner had been turned.
Right.
You knew something had just shifted within the Remnant hothouse. Mm-hmm. And you turned a corner that you just, I guess maybe you were flabbergasted that as weird, as insane, as unbridled, as unethical and craziest things could be in Remnant, it just lowered itself to a new depth.
Right. They were, and they were the highest that they had ever been in their own opinion.
Yeah.
Remnant was established. The building was established in Brentwood. There was less attack going on during that time period.
Right, right.
They had made it. They were getting into the communities. They're getting into the politics. They're gonna work their way into everything, into all the local businesses, all the schools. They've got a woman now who's principal over at Brentwood High School. They are set. And mm-hmm. Wynn's dream has happened. And no longer are we worshiping in the warehouse, you know, mm-hmm. in a lowly warehouse with a low stage, 1 foot off the ground.
Right.
Now it's a high stage off the ground. And right. You've got the lights and you've got the sanctuary. Now it looks fantastic, but it's painted. Mm-hmm. It's not real gold. It's painted gold. And I keep emphasizing that.
Right.
It's all painted. But they felt it. You could just see they had felt it. And the partying is just going to increase at this point, leading up to coming of Joe.
They were dazzled by their own image, like you said. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In essence, sounds to me like they really were just falling in love with their own golden calf.
Yes.
And that's where and Gwen, of course, smiled at all this and disapproved on it all. So how was this playing out with Elizabeth and your father? I mean, how were they dealing with all this change as well? I mean, obviously, you know, seeing these dynamics created, your mother going the direction she did. How is that working out for them?
Well, I think Elizabeth had her own difficult situations, right?
Yeah.
Before all this. And so she, I think it's important to note that, I mean, I don't necessarily feel I need to go into too much of it. I think most people know what happened to Elizabeth with the situation of losing a child during the Passover festival in 2012. But I think, which was a big deal in itself.
Yeah.
And I know that you have talked on it and a lot of other people have talked about it. It's mentioned on the HBO documentary. And it affected a lot of people, but, I think with how Gwen handled that situation, she's like seriously, crazily making people try to examine their own hearts, like members, you know, as if this disturbing, you know, as if that was the disturbing cause, you know, like some random members were sinning. She's deflecting any sort of guilt or blame, which would have been naturally heading in their direction because that's how Remnant was. Doctrines were laid out, blessings and curses, but they're such experts at never assuming guilt, right. You know, and they're so fast how they can turn the spotlight back on a person calling them out. It's projection, you know. I think they almost, it's like taking a playbook, you know, line out a playbook of like Karl Marx or something, you know. It's the accuse your enemy of what you were doing as you were doing it to create confusion.
Right, right.
And that's personally what I think leadership was attempting to do. You blame the people all while this was on the leaders.
You know,
it's on Gwen. And it's a means of making everybody confused and they're questioning. And people are all probably thinking something like that deep inside. But, you know, this is a high control religion. I think Gwen's, though, insistence not to be able to grieve was a factor and in her future endeavors. And it was a factor in how she appeared. I think everyone's seen it. You know, she was some ghoulish, you know, black dressed figure at this point. And, you know, and I already mentioned, you know, the embarrassing situation of being called out after the European trip.
Mm-hmm.
And these were very serious reasons that Elizabeth would have like this secret hatred towards Gwen. you know. Mm. And
really?
Yeah.
Secret hatred.
Mm. And but she knows all the while she's gonna be next in line. That's what Gwen's telling her, right? She mm-hmm. knows she's being trained for that.
Yep.
She's embarrassed, she's upset. But see, I mean, from my experience being around Gwen and way down and hearing from other women that have lost a child, you know, the grieving process doesn't seem to end.
Right.
You know, I've known people that are grieving years after therapy, you know, and they're... I would have thought therapy, you know, would have been the bare minimum for what Elizabeth needed.
Yeah.
And joining a support group, but that's not in Gwen's estimation, right? Oh,
yeah.
And, you know, sure, grieving's different for different people, but her personality was similar to Gwen's with the context they have zero forgiveness if someone slights them or, you know, or somebody's rude to them. You know, it's kind of the mean girl type, you know. They're always thinking about how to get back at somebody that hurt them, right? So I think besides that, so for the future, for these years, you know, besides what I think talked about with the Remnant Master Plan, right, the version 2.0, I'd say it made her into more of a cruel, bleeding kind of regent. Like a young, whenever Gwen was gone or something, she was... In those brief moments, I mean, she became more cruel. She was kind of became more of a hiding out sort of person in training over at her house, which she, in her true Elizabeth arrogant fashion, I will say, after all this, during this time period, you know, when the days come, she names their house Highgrove. I think that's just so perfect for her.
Highgrove
is what she named her and Brandon's house. I just think what a humble name to come up with. But she was, you know, and she's working with, during this time period, she's working with and talk, you know, with her, talking with her wine to these impressionable RF youth. So she's throwing herself into the youth. She's already kind of enacting her next, you know, in her mind, the next generation right. plan. And, so, you know.
In her case, though, I mean, you mentioned, yeah.
And she backs off from some of the crazy.
Yeah.
The Gwen stuff. She just became more of a homebody.
Right. So what she did does, but you mentioned this, you know, in most cases, people who lose, I mean, losing a child. Again, that's just an unconscionable thing to think of. You know, you just can't believe anyone could ever want to interfere with the process of putting that in focus in your life. I mean, a death of a child is just so mm-hmm. tragic to begin with. Mm-hmm. And the process of moving beyond it is never ending. But in this right. case, it sounds to me like with the way your sister was treated, it was never allowed to begin.
Exactly.
It was never allowed to proceed, and that she began losing herself into herself and into a deeper pursuit of the Way Down Workshop as the only way to really look beyond it, because obviously that was the message. The message was perfect. The doctrine was perfect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in so doing, she began proceeding down the direction you're mentioning right now. That's right. Really.
That's right. Yeah. She was not outwardly going to say anything. Right.
Right.
She's right. smart enough to know how to keep on right. this track.
So by the time when the Days got up there and made their big announcement how they've arrived and you know, we're now the kingdom of love and we blah 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 blah. Where was she at that point? I mean, this is 4 years later. Where was she at? Was she just continuing on with this busy work somewhere quietly, or was she? I mean, she was.
Well, that's what I meant. She's over it. That's yeah. what I meant. She's yeah. over at her house. She's over at Highgrove.
Right.
She's retreating okay. to her.
That's where she's at. Okay.
Her retreat.
Understood. And
she now, when we travel, she's not going, which was very difficult on Brandon. She didn't like to travel because she had some I'm not going to say anything personally that has to do with issue, you know, eating issues or eating disorder issues or something. She had situations it was hard for her to travel. And so Brandon would go everywhere, mm-hmm. and she stayed home. She had issues with control, and it drove Brandon crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry to hear that.
But she stayed there, and she was brooding, you know, but she had the youth over. And so there's always a little bit of an element of hatred to everything.
Yeah.
There's an element.
Were you traveling at this point with her?
I was traveling for the most part with everything.
Wow.
Me and Aaron/L were always going with them. Right. And Brandon would go, which that's what was difficult, to be a lot of couples, but Brandon would be on his own.
Now, with her intellectual, not we'll strike that word, with her product line being at a standstill by this point, if she's going somewhere, what was she doing? What was her message? Was she just playing out the same old tired siren song about the message and weight on workshop and, you know, thin eating and all that jazz? Was she just voicing that? I mean, what were those meetings like? They can't have been too innovative.
No, they were not innovative. These would become more of drinking celebrations for the most part. I think if there was ever anything serious, it would start a little serious and then it progresses into funny. Because you have the day, you know, you like us, you've had the days can be very funny, can be very charming. Ted can be very funny. A lot of these people, it could be very fun, right? Especially if they're out of town somewhere. They're not talking about serious issues at this point.
Right. It's more entourage type travel.
Right. Right.
You guys are going to go out. You're going to give a talk for a little bit, and you're going to go out and have a great time.
Like an example would be going to Florida, Destin, once again, Destin, which is kind of the remnant spot in Florida on the Gulf. But like an example would be if we're in Destin, Gwen still dictates the schedule for everyone. But so if she decides that, hey, we're all going to stay in tonight, then we're all staying in. I mean, like 100 people, you know, it's
100 people that big, yeah. An entourage.
Yeah, could be.
Wow.
A lot of young people too, but a lot of these are like volunteers, kids coming along to help babysit, you know, stuff like that. It's a lot of people. Everybody also has lots of kids. It's a remnant thing. So when we're in Florida, you know, there may be people have some free time during the day. And then at night, Gwen wants to have, they called it pregame, right? Where people would come drink before you go out and drink. Yep. So you okay. She would have her house open for pregame, you know, in Destin. And then there's volunteers and guys and security going ahead to go get tables for people wherever Gwen and Rob and all of them would want to go.
Yeah. So get the bomb sniffing dog out there, sweep for bugs, stuff like that. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And so they would have somebody go out there and go ahead and make sure that the path is make the path, you know, straight for our Lord. Right. And she's not driving anywhere. She's being driven everywhere. She can drink to whatever. And so she'd go out, and all it really is, if people are feeling like they're missing out, what you're missing out on is hearing Gwen drunkenly talk for 4 hours straight. She's a talker. She can talk for 4 hours straight, and I'm not kidding. And the more alcohol, it's almost intolerable.
Yeah,
it's already bad enough, but when she is drunk, it's awful to have to sit there. And I mean, it's just eye rolling from the start, and you know it's going to be two more hours of this. It's just, she starts talking slower as she drinks more. So by the end, it's just like late, and people are like, can we please just get out of here? You just want her, everyone wants her to shut up. Wow. But she keeps talking and talking and talking. And
so this is the content of her talks then. From that
people would fall asleep. People would be falling asleep on the couch. Just the kids have to come in there and sit, you know. And if she'll get upset, she would get upset a lot, which people didn't see in a lot of the regular Remnant members. I say regular Remnant members, like the Remnant members who were thankfully not having to be here. She would force all the kids to come in there and sit, you know, for like 3 or 4 hours, having to listen to Gwen drink and talk. And anything that happened, right, like in the news or something like that, she would restate it and try to act like she's the first person to break the news to the room. You know, she's just trying to teach everybody. Hmm. She sees herself as a teacher, so that's all it is. She's just constantly teaching.
Wow. Incredible. An incredible portrait of deception, deceit. I mean, fluff. That's really all this point. All she was doing, she was treading water, not doing too good at it either, was she?
No, she wasn't. And it actually, she got more sloppy as she got older.
Yeah.
It caught up to her. I think she was able to catch herself earlier. There were plenty of times, like when somebody may ask a question or make a decently smart sounding point while she's doing these drunken talks, and then she would hear it in a different way in her mind and take it the wrong way and just blast the person in front of everybody.
Yeah.
Like 80 people. And it was just a gross out. Like, she would blast somebody and say, "What are you talking to me about? What do you mean?" You know, and say, "You don't have the right," like, you know, just in a slurred word kind of way, just blast somebody so they're scared to death. And you're just hoping she just passes out and forgets about it. That's basically what it was. And then she would, by the end of the night, they're like walking her upstairs. Wow. But she's that gone.
Wow. And all this, and I have, you know, just want to ask the question again. All this is what's going on in the life of Remnant and the life of Waydown, and where, and your father was where during all this? He was just afar off behind stage somewhere, completely overlooked, done away with.
Yes, I mean, he's, right. I mean, he was not on these trips. He could not have put up with that.
Yeah.
He did not come to the gatherings. He would not have fit in anyway with the weight issue, but I mean, he's not going to be there to listen to this. She's literally physically trying to drive him away anyway. He's not invited. You know, she's pushing him out.
Yeah.
She's trying to push him out of Ashlom at this point. This starts kind of getting into the phase where I think she started getting a little scarier there by this point.
Yeah.
In my opinion. She started changing because she was starting to want out. Like this was more like go time.
Oh yeah. Well, she was Gigi, the party girl.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, she almost was like her alter ego. Like, I think I used to joke about that with some people, like, Gigi's going to show up.
Yeah.
But well, he was not there. Yeah, he was not around. And
Sounds like that he was doing all he can to stay out of the way and, you know, pursue that solitary life where he's just trying to deal with it. He didn't really know what to do.
No, and she's... Like I said, she's masterfully trying to, I mean, she drinks a lot, but she's still smartly knowing how to drive somebody away. Like, for instance, she'd hold, you know, really random large meetings at Ashlom, like all the time.
Mm.
And she's portioning him to the back rooms, you know, and she's saying things that she knows is going to make him not want to come home. Like, he's going to want to stay at his cigar bar hangout. Like, she'll say things like, you know, leaders will be over here at Ashlawn, just letting you know, and we'll be out at the pool house, and maybe some people will need to walk into the kitchen now and then, you know, but, you know, we should be out at the pool house. But like, things like that, that he's not going to want to run into somebody at night, 7:30, who comes into the kitchen to drink when he's trying to get food. You know what I'm saying? It's things of that nature. And then Gwen is immediately turning around and acting falsely, complaining like David Shamblin always wants to stay out late. You know, she had thousands of these, like, techniques that she had just become an absolute master at giving out. So she was obviously wanting something more at this point.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening today as we explore just where are we going. Our prayer is that you have been encouraged and strengthened, and if necessary, challenged in your daily journey through life. Jesus is coming. You can fall with the night, or you can rise with the sun. The choice is yours. You can email us with questions and comments at feedback@spiritwatch.org. And if you need urgent personal spiritual help, email us at help@spiritwatch.org. We look forward to hearing from you. Please follow our podcasting at our Facebook page and our website at spiritwatch.org. This podcast is a production of Spirit Watch Ministries, taking heed that no man deceives you.
And I will give you pastors according to mine heart, which shall feed you with knowledge and understanding. Surely, as a wife treacherously departeth from her husband, so have ye dealt treacherously with me, O house of Israel, saith the Lord.